You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 24 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we chat with Nissen Naya. We're going to talk Tencent, new highs at Tencent pushing NASPAS and process, and naturally the top 40 upwards, zero-based budgeting. What does that mean? How does it work? And the Ashburton 1200 ETF is changing. We'll dig into the what, whys, and hows around that. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb, the South African Reserve Bank, and the FECA investigating CrowdOne. From Business Day, Pepco to raise capital to support a balance sheet. Morning markets, we got overnight the US S&P up 0.4%. NASDAQ, new all-time high, up 0.7%. Asia, mixed. Sydney up 0.1%. Tokyo down 0.1%. Commodities also mixed, oil under pressure, but gold continuing to edge higher. We got the Rand at 17.21 and the top 40 opening call for a slightly green opening.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the money. Also available on podcast.
I got Nissen Naya, portfolio manager at Susfin Securities, on the line. Nissen, appreciate your time. Tencent making new all-time highs yesterday, up strongly today, this morning out of Hong Kong, again edging higher. Just no stopping Tencent. It really is a juggernaut, gaming and its other bits playing out in China and pushing NASPAS process and ultimately our markets higher as well.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. You know, it's wonderful to have such good news, at least amidst all the doomsday sales and the negative news and the having to work from home or live from work, you know, depending on how you look at it. But a strong performance generally, I think, from a lot of these technology companies. I think the current environment has just shown how important, how indispensable technology is. You know, in modern day living, you know, I think we can remember those days in 2017 when Tencent was doing a similar thing, and then mm-hmm. in 2018 it all came back down, even for NASPAS as well. And a lot of investors have got that in the back of their mind. But NASDAQ hitting all time highs, technology definitely the place to be. For the moment anyway.
Yeah, you make a good point there. NASDAQ also at all-time highs. S&P not quite there yet. It certainly is a big tech-driven rally. Lots is rallying, but big tech is leading the way. After the close yesterday, Pepco putting out an announcement. They're going to do a book build. It's about 2 billion rand they're looking for. 5% of market cap. So in their life, modest. 2 billion, not insignificant. Nissen, we've seen a spate of these coming to market. As shareholder in some of the stocks that you might hold that do book builds, are you going to be following pretty much the rights issues, capital raises, or are you going to be picking and choosing perhaps more carefully as to the viability of the businesses and the likelihood of them maybe coming for even more down the line?
You know, it's fascinating. You know, Pepco listed at about, was it 20-odd rand a few years ago. It's almost half that now and raising this level of cash on the back of, was it City Lodge early on this week that announced that they were going to raise cash. How things have changed. I mean, we've gone from a dividend-paying situation to you know, to these book builds and rights issues and, you know, asking shareholders for money. So I think it's a sign of the time. It's definitely an ongoing theme. I think you point that out. And it's worthwhile investors remembering that. You know, if you're going to maintain your shareholding and you don't want to be diluted, you're going to have a fair amount of dry powder, at least for the next year or so. So that you can at least follow your rights or participate in these book buildings. You know, I'm not sure whether things are cheap enough yet, Michael. And I know the markets seem quite high and, you know, there's exuberance. Certainly in the U.S. market, you get the sense that, you know, people have almost forgotten that we in the midst of a pandemic that hasn't actually gone away. But then they also say that, you know, you never get a bear market in a recession. which means that the market is pointing to better days ahead. But I think in South Africa, we'll have to wait until we'll have to see what plans Tito has today, actually.
Yeah,
revive the economy. But I don't think there's too many South African investors out there that are as optimistic as what the market's messaging.
Yeah, and I take your point. The budget later today, the revised budget, is going to be one of the hardest ever. We thought the February budget was going to be tough. This is going to be even tougher. Certainly, you mentioned, you allude to, maybe the worst is behind us. Still a long road ahead of us. We saw some market Eurozone manufacturing PMI coming out, still below the 50, but rising. I mean, 46.9 broadly across the board in the European zone, up from 39.4. Still tough, but a lot of evidence coming that maybe April, the hard lockdown across the world, was the sort of low point, and now it's just going to be that long road back to normalcy and back to sort of December 2019 GDP levels.
You know, I definitely think so. I think it's, remember when we locked down in April, the world had no idea how they were going to deal with this pandemic. We identified healthcare, getting the healthcare infrastructure up to speed. And this is largely being done across the world. So even though there's a spate of second wave infections, I think the authorities around the world are convinced that, they can deal with whatever gets thrown at them. We'll still have to see whether that's the case or not. And of course, as time drags on, we get closer and closer to a virus. We've got alternative therapies now. You saw, was it last week, from Oxford University, they were able to use steroids to deal with people that are, or portion of the people that are very, very ill as a result of COVID-19. So as things go along, I think we get better and better at dealing with it, as we should. But if you look at the markets, I think, and that's where the concern for me, the markets are pricing in a much more rosier environment than the steady, return to normality that we've seen. So I'm scratching my head and looking at what I'm missing. it's great. I mean, I think it's great for investors, especially those that were brave enough, to stay invested through the downturn. And there were many of those. I think they're being rewarded for that bravery right.
And the even braver, which I wasn't one of, who were buying in those heady days of market collapses. I stayed in, but I certainly didn't pick up anything further. And I like your point. We are getting better at this. We should be. It makes perfect sense. But certainly the evidence is we are also getting better. Nesanaya, Portfolio Manager, Sasfin Securities, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Martin Ackerman, he's chief economist at Citadel. Minister Mboweni gives his revised budget speech later this afternoon, 3 o'clock. He will be giving that speech. One of the comments he made a week or so ago that he wanted to do a zero-based budget. And at the time, it's what's a zero-based budget? What does this mean? Martin, help us understand. Zero-based budget, what was the minister referring to when he put that phrase out there into the media?
Yes, good morning. It's only, you work with a three-year fiscal framework. So every year it's almost an update in terms of what we budgeted last year, giving feedback, especially in October. Are we making progress? Are we getting our revenue targets? How's the expenses going? So the budget is building on, previous years in terms of what's being spent, which projects went through. And then also trying to stick to the plan for the next couple of years that's still in the fiscal framework. Now, zero-based budgeting is basically saying, every year we start from scratch. And typically in an environment like this where, what happened last year and what might happen next year is almost irrelevant. So we're in a very tough time. Think about your personal budget. So what if you had a budget last year that worked? And now, as a result of COVID, maybe you've lost your job or you've got only part of your income. You can't budget and spend the same way. So zero-based budget is to say, where are we now? What is the potential revenue that we are going to get? What is the other sources of funding that we can try and source? And then what does that allow us to actually then spend? So it's not just keep on spending blindly, is trying to say, well, what can we afford in this environment? And then do exactly the same next year and the year thereafter until you get traction again. So that's sort of the concept of it. I think Minister Mboweni was very, you know, he's making the point that, you know, what happened last year, and especially the expense side of the budget, we can't just assume that that means business as normal, given what's been happening on the revenue side.
Yeah, and you make a great point. I mean, from a personal household budget, I imagine there are a bunch of corporates out there as well who, frankly, had never budgeted for a period of zero revenue, which they've suddenly incurred during different stages of lockdown. And what it's going to practically mean, I suppose, and we're almost kind of ignoring the revenue side, which is tax collection. We're focusing more perhaps on the spending side. And the issue here is going to be a case of some departments probably getting a lot more. Health is an obvious one. But some departments actually seeing budget cuts and being said, look, we know you had a plan, but these are extraordinary times, and your plan is going to have to change and perhaps change markedly.
Exactly. So it is also reprioritizing to say, well, you know, last year there was room for some other projects which just simply can't happen at this point in time. So it is down to each and every department to almost also zero-cost budget and say, well, we need to focus on the essentials at this point in time. Something like you've mentioned, healthcare, but also mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. and almost the luxury above the line goods. You know, we need to think twice about those, whether we can afford it and whether that's something that can wait. So it is putting a little bit more responsibility on each and every department to really reprioritize in terms of where the rand will go. In terms of what they receive at this budget.
And you mentioned the big challenge, though. This is probably a fairly lengthy process. It's almost a case of you start with nothing and you have to rebuild rather than sort of just adding on to. And time constraints have probably made it, in some ways, not as practical as perhaps the minister would have liked, or not as easy, perhaps, as the minister would have liked.
No, it's definitely a challenge, you know, because you're almost coming from the other side of the budget, which is the revenue side, and say, well, this is how much we've got and what can we do with that. We typically use, you know, like if, especially over the past couple of years, we start with the expense side, we didn't really want to change anything on that side, and then you try and see how you can match that. So, yes, in this budget, there is going to be a couple of tough challenges or other decisions in terms of what different departments and all the minister need to communicate. You know, probably he alluded to the wage bill in February to get to a zero-based budget that can work. That will definitely be one of the points again. So, well, you know, what are we going to do with a significant wage bill in a year where we start from scratch? Can we afford increases? Can we afford you know, the number of public servants that we do have on the payroll. So those are the challenges that he needs to explain later today.
Yeah, and it's going to be the February budget. I thought he really put a rabbit out the hat with that one. This budget, man, it's going to be tough. That's Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist at Citadel, helping us understand zero-based budgeting. So appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I got Vicky Tagg on the line. She's head of indexation at Ashburton Investments, one of their ETFs, which is it's a global ETF. It's the S&P 1200. The code is ASHGEQ, and it's coming. It having some tweaks and changes to it. Essentially, going to become a fund of funds. Vicky, morning. Appreciate your time. What essentially you're doing is you're saying rather than pick up individual stocks to make this ETF, you're going to go and invest into other ETFs. It'll give me the same performance, but it'll do it at a cheaper total expense ratio.
Yes, absolutely. Morning, Simon. So we really like the index itself. We didn't want to change that. We just wanted to really bring an optimal structure to clients, so bring it at the absolute lowest cost. The index itself, which is the S&P Global 1200 index, is fantastic. It offers a really well-diversified global equity basket for investors. It's got some emerging market exposure around 7%. It represents 70% of the world's market cap across seven distinct regions, such a country. So it's really, by buying one ETF, you get this incredible global equity exposure. But originally, the product was designed to physically hold the constituents. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to try and hold all of those stocks. And we realized over time that that is actually quite an expensive option. And there are better ways to do it by taking advantage of the likes of our shares or stages. So one of the components we would invest into is the iShares S&P 500, which is the second largest ETF in the world. It has over $200 billion in it, and is available at a total expense ratio of 7 basis points. So it would make sense that instead of holding those underlying constituents in the index, we hold the 7 ETFs that track or that comprise the global 1,200 index. So it's really just optimizing the structure. And in order to do that, we have to change it from a standard ETF portfolio to a fund of funds. So a standard ETF portfolio that was holding all the constituents to a fund of funds that just holds the 7 underlying ETFs. And that is what we're proposing to investors at the moment.
And effectively, the rate's going to drop from 0.67 to 0.49. We live in amazing times when a 0.18% drop is frankly, it's wonderful. But I mean, it's almost a third of the cost coming off. As a current holder of the ETF, I'm going to get exactly the same ultimate exposure. But there will be a balloting process. Holders of this ETF,
yes,
via their broker or their CSD will be asked to vote yay or nay on the changes.
Yes, that's right. So we are voting on the changes of the restructure. As you say, the effect will be that the management fee will change from the current 0.37% to 0.25%, and the total investment cost we expect to change from 0.67% down to 0.49%. And in time, as the fund grows in scale, we'll endeavor to bring that lower and lower. I mean, that's just the nature of indexation. It's just, you know, drive those costs down to the bottom as far as we can. The management of the portfolio, income distributions, the risk profile, everything else stays the same. But as you say, we have to go through a balloting process. And that process is slightly different to a normal ballot because ballot letters are not posted. It's all done electronically, mm-hmm, the same way that a corporate action is done, which is very useful in these times, obviously. and you'll remember CoreShares followed the same process last, yep, year when they restructured. So the announcement to the investors for the proposed restructure went out by SENS on the 22nd of June. Then investors that wish to vote, and they must be unit holders on the 25th of June, will notify their brokers or their CSDPs of their decision to accept or reject the restructure. And they'll then submit the responses to the auditors on the 4th of August. And then in terms of the requirements, 25% of the investors must respond and the majority must be in favour of the proposal. And should that be the case, then the results will be announced on the 11th of August. Mm-hmm. And should we be able to change it, it will be effective on the 19th of August. So it's quite a seamless, quick process, and yeah, we hope that it all goes through successfully.
What is important is investors don't contact you at all. You've initiated the balloting process, but you're not involved in the balloting process. It needs to be independent. They need to speak to whoever holds the ETF on their behalf in order for them to vote one way or the other.
Absolutely. They should not contact the banker at all. They should contact their broker, their CSDP, and they will advise the auditors. And they will, so it'll be independently audited, and it'll all go through, yeah, that way.
We'll leave that there. I am a holder of the ETF. I will be voting, and heck, I am always going to vote for a lower fee. I've never met a lower fee I didn't like. That's Vicky Tagg. She's head of indexation at Ashburton. Appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every morning 6:30 on moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. We mentioned the budget at 3 o'clock. MoneyWeb will be streaming that budget live as the minister presents it. Chat to us on the social medias, Twitter and Facebook, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening, my guests for giving us their time this morning, producer Cordora, sound engineer Eddie, and we'll be back again tomorrow. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.